Good morning, Jack Teeling. What a pleasure to have you on our podcast today. So thank you very much for joining and taking some time out of your busy, busy life, I'm sure. I thought it would be a good place to start is let's maybe not assume that everyone knows your face. So for those who may be less in the know, who are you, Jack, and what is it that you do?
Yeah, well, look, delighted firstly to be on your podcast and just a little introduction of who I am. I'm Jack Teeling. I'm the founder and managing director of the Teeling Whiskey Company. I founded in 2012 with a vision of bringing our old family brand back to life, bring distilling back to the city centre of Dublin in Ireland, but more importantly, to bring the breadth and choice in the premium end of the Irish whiskey market that I didn't think was actually there. So I felt there was a great opportunity and a need for Irish whiskey to have a full, let's say, repertoire of unique and differentiated offerings to allow the category to expand and continue to grow and to really tap into, I suppose, the consumer interest in new, interesting, and maybe a little bit more, let's say, younger approach to a very traditional category. So that's where it came from. And 11 years into the journey here,
11 years.
Or plus. Plus, nearly 12 years now. It'll be 12 years come
March. I know, we're in a new year. Well, we're going to explore that a little bit. But just to go back, I mean, 11 years, obviously, there was a career before that. Am I right in thinking you started your career in finance? Is that right?
Well, we're going right back to the
start. I know that's a long time ago.
Yeah, right back. Yeah, I feel very old when I realize when I went to university.
Sorry.
Yeah. That's gray hairs that I have. But I started off just in doing management. I specialized then in finance for a master's, ended up working in investment banking for a couple of years, went to Australia, worked over there, came back to Ireland. My father had started a distillery in 1987. First new distillery in Ireland at the time, broke a monopoly called Cooley Distillery. I grew up with all that in the background and so forth. But my view was I'd never work with my father for my father just because of the dynamics and so forth. But I must have come back in a very positive frame of mind because he invited me to come in and I went in and I was working there for a while and I saw an opportunity. I saw firsthand that Irish whiskey was going through this growth phase and I felt there was an opportunity for me to help with what he was doing, but also to get involved in making something traditionally 100% Irish, could survive globalization. I had a real global opportunity and I went back and I studied a bit in international business and so forth to upskill myself. And luckily enough, I became the sales and marketing director there, then became the managing director, and I was there when it was sold to Beam Inc., as it was called back then, in 2009, 2012. And I took my knowledge from working in Cooley and my insights, consumer insights, and I started afresh. But with, you know, again, I suppose the experience and reputation and contacts that I generated over 10 years working in the industry.
Yeah. And I guess that's quite important when you're starting, because it's a very niche industry to enter as a new entrepreneur. And I guess that knowledge and that connection or those relationships are really important for getting hitting the ground running, would you say?
Definitely. I do think you need to have an insight into the business. So you can be attracted towards it, but unless you know how the challenges and the pitfalls that you can fall into very easily, there's a lot of barriers to entry. So it's easy to, now it's easy to get supply of whiskey, be it in Scotland or America or in Ireland and have a brand, but that's fine. That doesn't necessarily set you up for success. You really need to understand consumers that are are buying the products. You understand the challenges of route to market and financing and all the sort of stuff like that. So I think, and also there's a credibility challenge that if you're new in it, people, you have to generate the trust and, as you say, relationships that take some time to do. So I was lucky I could kind of leverage on that, but it would put pressure on. I didn't want to screw it up. So you're only one bad whiskey or one bad release away from losing all that credibility that you can build up. So I suppose that's why we put a lot of emphasis into the quality of our whiskey, particularly at the start.
Yeah.
And we continue to do so.
That is an interesting take, because we'll be talking to another distiller of rye whiskey over in the US. And one of the things that she mentioned was this idea of, because there's this length, you put all this time into flavor, and then you have to just sit and wait for a while. And there's a huge amount of risk involved in that, because, you know, I can imagine the pressure of just thinking, what if this doesn't actually taste the way that I was anticipating it would taste? So there's a lot of risk in new flavors. And of course, that interest, that insight pays off, and it's paying off for Teeling.
Yeah, and it's again, surrounding, it wasn't just me. I brought in Alex Chasko, who's our master distiller, blender, early stage. So it was sounding boards there to work with. And also, even when we were launching our very first release, we worked with the Irish Whiskey Association, which were, knowledgeable Irish Whiskey Society, right. Association. That has come afterwards. But in terms of knowledgeable consumers to taste it and to sense check that we were going the right direction to, not relying on our own insights and palates, but, in the early stage, it was very useful to use them as a sounding board to make sure we were doing something interesting and different, because we were very keen on doing something that was adding to the category, not just, it's another Redbreast or it's another, Jameson or whatever. We wanted to bring something in that was adding. So we weren't trying to rob. We were trying to rob from other categories and bring them to Irish whiskey rather than trying to rob from the existing, Irish category.
Yeah, and reinforce the value of why that category exists and has its own legacy.
Yeah.
Before we go into a little bit of that, how is it like, obviously, you were immersed in the family business at Cooling. You started your own business with your brother. I know what it's like to work with your brother. Stephen?
You should be asking him. I'm the older brother, so it's a little bit like father-son, older brother, younger brother dynamic. So Stephen joined Teeling Whiskey in 2013. He stayed on a little bit longer to, I suppose, learn or not learn what bigger companies do and what they do well and so forth. So he worked a bit with Beam with the rollout of the Irish whiskeys within them. So he joined then. And what's great about working with family is again, trust. It's very hard to get with other people, because you're always the back of your mind is like, are they on the same page? Normally with family members, you are on the same page. And obviously having a brand and a company with our surname, it's good to have more Teelings involved to share the load and go around the world, meet people and so forth. So in particular in the early days when we had to do a lot of the heavy lifting directly ourselves, meeting our customers, meeting, consumers and so forth. It was very, very useful to spread the load and he brings his own insight and energy and so forth. So we worked well as a team. There's a team of people there, and a lot of the people who are still with us were there from the start. So at least they all bought into the vision. And have been there for the journey as we have developed over the last, as you said, 11 years.
Yeah. And it's interesting, actually, naturally you've created a dynamic where they're all working to a shared goal, that passion that exudes from both you and Stephen is coming through into people staying and believing in what they're creating with you. So I think that's a really important dynamic with family-run businesses naturally, but it's coming through.
Yeah, yeah. No, just as I said, lucky to have the wider Team Teeling, as we call it. Yeah.
Well, hopefully at one point I get to meet them all. That wasn't an invitation, but if you want to invite me over to Dublin, I'm really happy.
It's a warm Irish welcome for you to our distillery.
Fantastic.
It's in the city centre of Dublin, very accessible, and can be part of a weekend in Dublin or part of a wider kind of tour around the country, because everyone comes through Dublin, thankfully, so makes us very accessible.
Ooh, fab. Well, we'll make sure that there's a link to any visitors who want to come by at the distillery. I can imagine that's quite a worthwhile experience. So let's talk about just a little bit about, you touched on it earlier about this world of whiskey. You wanted to create something that was actually adding to the Irish whiskey segment, but also be a global player as well. Is the world of premium whiskey here to stay, do you reckon? Has it had its time? Do you think?
Well, for Irish whiskey, whiskey in general, premiumization, I feel it's here to stay, and I do think it's down to a multitude of different reasons. People will drink less but better. Like, it's happened in every other category. It's continued to happen. It's at the early stage with Irish whiskey. It's well defined within American whiskey, Scottish whiskey. It's developing with American whiskey and so forth. So this trend is well established, and it's going to happen at different paces around the world. You know, there's still a sense of discovery for entry level whiskeys in emerging markets, in markets like China, which are, the premiumization has happened very fast.
Wow! Yes. Yeah. I know, yeah.
Yeah. And then India, again, is happening at different stages. So globally, it is happening. It will probably perhaps slow down slightly in more mature markets, but accelerate in other markets. So on the global trend, consumer trend in general, I don't think that's going anywhere. Obviously, when times are a little bit tighter, we're going through, intraday cycles and so forth, it does slow it down, makes it a little bit more challenging. People are a little bit more mindful. But I think that, let's say the consumer trend or the, intrinsic, desire to try different things and be willing to pay a little bit more, it's not going anywhere. And with Irish whiskey in particular, it's just at a very early stage of happening. And the reason why it hasn't happened is because there hasn't been so much choice within the category. And most of the growth has still just happened within the if you look at standard distribution, it's happening mainly in the middle. So the tails, the premium, super premium end is only at the early stages of evolutions.
That's really interesting. So not only are you establishing a brand, you're actually reestablishing an Irish legacy, if you will, because you're offering more choice. You're promoting the fact that actually it has a part to play in this wider industry of whiskies and dark spirits and premium spirits. That's quite a purposeful approach.
Well, when we were setting up, the vision was, we are Irish, but we play in premium whiskey, premium spirits, to be honest with you. I do think people aren't as compartmentalized as they used to be in terms of I'm a Scotch drinker, I'm a American whiskey. No. I've a repertoire of brands that I consume within the spectrum of what I'm willing to pay. So we saw the opportunity was bigger than what Irish was, but look, that's our DNA. That's who we are. We'll always be, consider that. But for us, the brand was in a premium brand space, and that's exciting, but it's even more challenging because it's so competitive and there's so many people out there screaming for attention. So it's a challenge. And again, it's just when you're building the premium end of Irish whiskey, there's a lot of hard work that needs to go into it. It doesn't just happen overnight. You have to justify why this part of the Irish whiskey category deserves to have a range of offerings. And I think we've done a pretty good job as an industry over the last 10 years, giving consumers the confidence that, these premium Irish whiskeys that cost more money are interesting and deserve to be in their, whiskey collection.
As a marketer, we talk a lot about personas and to help us picture what our customers are like or act like. Or do you have a picture of what an avid, loyal Teeling whiskey drinker is?
Yeah, it's constantly evolving. Before Teeling whiskey was, just consumers were slightly older. But over the last 15 years, it's definitely the size of the prize of younger people entering the category, and younger being, I'm talking like 21, 20, early 20s all the way up to, and our we start off, our demographic was, let's say 21 to like 35, but it's increased because I've got older.
It just feels so much younger.
It's quite a diverse. So it depends on where you go. And like, if you go to a whiskey show and just pick our home country, because when I was growing up, it was very much an older person's drink. But now there is this kind of interesting dynamic of you do like Whiskey Live in Dublin, or you know, your whiskey tasting, you'll get this two different cohorts. You get an older cohort and you get a younger cohort, and it's missing this kind of cohort in the middle. But it's really interesting dynamic, and you know, a higher percentage of women and so forth interested in learning and getting into the category. So it's a really exciting time. But you know, people are drinking as cocktails, drinking straight, coming into it in through different ways. And you know, what I find is the most exciting is that they want to learn. They are open to learning. So yes, they are attracted to brands, but they want to connect. It's not just about being on, you know, billboards and all that kind of stuff like that. It's all about having emotional connection, sharing similar values, but also, you know, providing them with the choice and range of offerings that they're looking for. And that's a challenge.
Yeah.
That you know, people are looking for new things all the time. As a brand, you want to tap into that. But, you know, at some stage, you can do nearly too much and you confuse consumers, especially when they're new coming into the category. So there's a bit of tension there in terms of the need for new product development, but also ensuring that you are creating a sustainable range of expressions that can grow. So you're not just cannibalizing yourself.
There's an interesting take there on how actually it's beyond the physical and how we're now trying to create experiences and educational opportunities for the final consumer. Let's delve into that in a little bit, but let's talk about choice, right? We have way too much now. That's a blessing, but it's also a curse. And we talk about this a lot in our work with clients is shelf appeal. Now, perhaps we talk about it too much, but how does tealing go about standing out against, perhaps it's not even standing out, it's reinforcing a more youthful Irish whiskey brand, but how does it ensure on a shelf, if you will, or the digital shelf, that people are looking at you over others?
Yeah, look, it's a very relevant but tough question. And what you want to do is stand out for the right reasons. And you want to, again, people engage with brands in many different ways. And when you are a smaller, non-multinational, where you don't have the same budgets, you know, obviously your on-shelf presence is so important. And again, when people are attracted to a wall of offerings, will your presentation encourage them to pick it up? So that's the first challenge. Or they walk into a bar and they're looking at a back bar with so much whiskey. It's like, how are you going to stand it? So you know, it's a key thing. And also, you can have the world's best whiskey, which is amazing whiskey, and you don't put in the right packaging,
then
people won't have the right experience, because you experience whiskey, it's environmental. It's every aspect of what you deliver, delivers that experience that they'll remember or won't remember, or you know, so forth. So when they're looking at your bottle and they're sampling your whiskey, that's part of the experience. There's a lot of times when you walk into a bar, a whiskey bar, they will obviously, let's say, they'll pour you the drink, but they'll also leave you the bottle so you can examine the bottle and engage with it in that way.
Interesting.
At the same time, if you're ever, you know, in someone's house and they're, you know, talking about a new whiskey or something like that, they'll always, you'll tactically touch the bottle. It's a full sensory experience. So the whiskey obviously is a key part of it, but how you represent that liquid in your packaging has a massive influence on the perception of the quality and everything that you're trying to achieve as a brand. So it's a skin, it's the facade that you need to understand, you know, how consumers will perceive that. And I've been involved with brands who have taken very radical approaches to the bottle and tried to disrupt the category and so forth. And it has backfired them, because consumer reaction was, why are they trying so hard to make this look like something else? the liquid must be, you know, crap. So again, you need to understand your consumers. You need to understand how they perceive what type of bottle it is, you know, what the label, what the, you know, the cork, you know, versus a twist top. You know, there's lots of things like that. So if you're in the premium space, all aspects of your experience, the weight of the bottle, like, you know, it's something that you want for sustainability is to have a lighter bottle, but then the perception of quality is diminished by people pick it up if it's too light. So it's a really hard one to round off. Or secondary packaging is like, you know, the drive is to eliminate secondary packaging. But if you're paying £100 or $100 for a bottle, you want, they demand the secondary packaging. It's
absolutely.
So yeah. You know, while there's a lot of interest in sustainability and being as green as possible, the consumers aren't driving that as of yet in the super premium or the premium end of the market. So it's a key aspect of it. And again, for us, we wanted this combination of old and new. And back then there was no one really doing, obviously things have changed. A lot of people are doing lots of different things now. We wanted to have, you know, an old style bottle and kind of a standout label, and, you know, went to designers that had never done anything in Irish whiskey that I always liked and so forth. And we came up with the design, and I suppose it's evolved and devolved and gone different ways since then. But it's something that is, you know, put a lot of time and effort into and is a key part of making it stand out, just as much as ensuring that the whiskey is as good as it possibly can be as well.
I mean, you've answered about 6 million follow-up questions that I'd already had in my head. So well done. That was a really comprehensive and really thoughtful response to what we're dealing with the shelf appeal. There's so many considerations, so many things to play in part. We touched on sustainability. We also touched on premiumization. And I think what Teeling does really well, and exactly the aim that you have communicated here, something that's traditional, but bringing it to something more contemporary and relevant and young, you've absolutely hit the nail on the head with the Teeling brand. I went to BCB and I saw you having your trade fair stand there and the physicality. I see you online. Of course, we've taken some amazing photography of some of your bottles. I think it's fab. I guess how do you manage to have so many different collections? You've got the small batch, unconventional collection. You've got vintage reserve. You've got your limited editions. You've got this amazing Explorer series that you've rolled out. I think this was a Japanese edition. But across the board, you've managed to create this consistency. Even though there's such different, yet unique collections, what? How on earth do you manage that?
It's a good question. I don't know. Well, it's you know, obviously our core branding, it has to be consistent across what we do, even though we've debossed it, embossed it on glass rather than printed and so forth. But the look and feel, which is our core, you know, lockup or logo, is a consistent, let's say, point that we've used across multiple different types of bottles, multiple types of expressions, you know, at, you know, 40 euros to 4,000 euros. But again, you know, when you look at it, it looks very, you know, it's a Teeling straight away. I suppose we've been lucky to work with a quite tight team of designers and be very prescriptive what we want and how it should look. That's allowed us to. And I think the series, again, for us, it gives us a focal point. So we know what it's going to look like, and then we can change it from iterations going forward. So it's about getting the first one right, and then the rest you can tweak and change as go along. So I think that has been good for us. It's been good, hopefully, for collectors, and people understand then, oh yeah, well, we know this is your Explorers and it's going to be something weird and wacky from a weird part of the world like Brazil and Maranahar. You know, hardwoods to our Japanese moji soju casks and all this stuff. But it's a bit of a challenge. And again, it's you know, we've done a lot. And we're probably at a stage now of sense checking of, okay, well, we've done all these different things. Well, what do we want to do going forward? And what do consumers, you know, buy into the best? It's a constant learning and trying things and see what works, what doesn't work, and so forth. And you know, I suppose we're literally at a stage now of pardon pun, distilling down our offerings and focusing on stuff that we feel, you know, can live, you know, in a very competitive environment now, even with an Irish whiskey, and that will continue for us to stand out again for the right reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned your lockup, which of course is that amazing Phoenix emblem. Seems so intrinsic to your brand identity. Can you tell me what the Phoenix is about?
Yeah, yeah. So, well, Phoenix is about bringing things back to life. And the logic was, you know, we wanted to bring Teeling whiskey back to life, but also bring distilling in Dublin back to life, and to put Dublin as a distilling center back on the global scale of, you know, urban distillation, which it was back in the 18th, 19th century until, you know, the last distillery shut its doors in 1976. So I suppose that was kind of the mission, and we managed to achieve it. But, you know, again, it symbolizes, you know, everything that we're about, you know, in a way, giving back and bringing areas back to life and bringing new people coming in and rejuvenating Ireland, Dublin, you know, other urban centers around the world and so forth. So it's also around sustainability, reusing, you know, casks in different ways and lots of different things that tap into, I suppose, our intrinsic values that we've been trying to, you know, represent from the start. And in a way, it happens by accident in terms of being a core lockup, because the original design was for something totally different. That I didn't really feel reflected what I wanted to represent as modern Ireland and as, you know, what we're doing in Dublin. And it was, you know, our concept of the Phoenix rising from a pot still that, you know, came about. And thankfully now it's, we use as just on the Phoenix on its own to represent the brand. So hopefully it's becoming an iconic kind of a symbol.
I would say the same thing as someone who's incredibly passionate about branding and coming from a marketing background. That's the goal, isn't it? To not even have Teeling displayed, to just have that recognition, whether it's through color, aesthetic, an emblematic icon like the Phoenix. I think that's incredibly powerful. And particularly will come into fruition as you start to scale more globally and gain that recognition, which we will talk about in a little bit. Before we do, you mentioned earlier about this emotional connection that we need to create with our consumers, and the sensory considerations that we need to play a part in packaging. But what we don't explore, or perhaps it is something that Teeling is exploring, is how does that connection overlap into the digital world? Because let's face it, those 21-year-olds are on the TikToks, on the, I hate to put that such stereotype on it, but it is really a digital native world, that generation. How can packaging, if you haven't already thought about it already, is there an opportunity for those to work more closely together?
Well, yeah, look, I think obviously modern ways of connecting with people and how people discover brands have changed and will continue to change and are constantly changing. And even from, you know, 11 years, it's like a different world. And so obviously how you turn up digitally is equally as important as how you turn up on people's shelf, because that's where they're going to discover and that's where you want them to discover your story. And people now are relying on they don't want companies telling them about the brand. They want other people. They want people that they trust or they have a connection with and they follow to tell them about things. So there's a business that has emerged around that, which is a challenge for companies to crack into. But there is also an opportunity. And you can see brands who have done very, very well in a short period of time, the whole celebrity endorsed brands, because they use their platform to cut through all the noise. And, you know, I always say that this industry is like a marathon. It takes a long time. You did the right things over and over again. While these, you know, I suppose digital-led influencer models cut through all that and fast-track things a lot quicker if you have the distribution power behind you to take advantage of that as well. So it's really interesting and challenging. But how can you use your packaging to drive it is a very good point. And obviously people are looking at NFCs and, you know, QR codes and different ways to engage and to find. So people pick it up, you know, and they get their phone to it. And again, can they get your brand story, your message across in a very concise and interesting way. So that is an opportunity. But the problem is probably technology is moving either quicker or, you know, it's very hard to keep on top of this because what you do one year might be very, you know, outdated soon afterwards. So it's because things are changing very, very quickly. It's how you can do it. But, you know, you can see labels in the wine industry and so forth. The ones which are doing well are ones which are, you know, that you're able to engage with by using your whatever device to do so. So I think it's probably underrepresented within whiskey, and there is probably a great opportunity. And also, let's say, even blockchain and different ways to actually understand exactly where it's come from, to give you the confidence that, you know, when you're buying something expensive, that it is what it is. So yeah, there's definitely
absolutely
an extra layer, one, to tell the story, and two is consumer trust, or to allow that transparency that people are looking for about where it's come from and how it's actually got there, even the person who bottled it, like, you know, so the actual picture or somebody to engage with who it is. So there's definitely opportunities. It's messy, it's complicated, and there will be brands that will conquer it ahead of other people, and they'll have a first mover advantage. We're probably not doing enough of it because, you know, you can go down the rabbit hole quite quickly and spend a lot of time and effort on that, and you might take your eye off other things that you need to be doing. So, but it is something that we are very mindful of and we're keeping tabs on, but we haven't cracked it yet.
Yeah, but it's interesting when we've talked about it, you've highlighted both this need or this resurgence around influencer marketing and around the promotional side of things, but actually equally there's that educational side of things of understanding traceability, and creating transparency around it. So there's more that digital can offer, but I agree there's more to come, of course. Definitely watch this space. As a final note, I really do want to move over to the exciting news. Of course, Bacardi have always had a stake in Teeling. You've obviously caught their eye in terms of your success in this industry, in this, and as a core part of their portfolio, they want to be a part of your business. But a month ago, I would say, perhaps at the tail end of 2023, they've really upped their stake. And they've increased their investment. They've become a majority holder. This is exciting news for Teeling. In the meantime, I also think that you're expanding as well. So I've read that you're expanding your production or your maturation capacity. So you've got growth in mind, I would say, if I'm going to put that in a nutshell. Tell me about that. Where are we at as Teeling, that's now very well connected with a world leading brand like Bacardi, a fantastic business? What does that mean now for you and Stephen and the business?
Yeah, well, it hasn't happened overnight. You know, I first met Bacardi, I think it was 2013 or 14. I suppose the original involvement happened in 2017 when they came in as a minority investor and we started working with them in the US. We got to know each other. They got to know the brand. We got to know their company and how they do things. And, you know, there was a lot of shared values there because it's a family-owned business themselves, obviously much bigger than ourselves, but you know, they don't have necessarily the same pressures of a listed company like a Diageo. It's quarter, you know, taking longer term views on different things and so forth. So we took, you know, time to get to know each other, and it was actually at the end of 2022 that they increased their shareholding. So it was just we didn't announce it. So we've been working with them now in a slightly different perspective since then. And I suppose the logic of doing that was we were looking at, again, you know, I set up the business with a view of making a global brand, making Teeling whiskey into a global brand, you know, in the premium space. And my view is, you know, that's a goal. How do we get there? And can we do it all ourselves, or do we need some help? And, you know, the hardest thing no matter what, the whiskey, you know, the branding, all that kind of stuff. If you can't get your product onto shelf, or you don't have some of the distribution strength, it's very hard, you know, to go to where you want to go. But we've built very strong foundations in the whiskey community in a lot of different markets. And I suppose we were looking at how do we step up and you know, make it, you know, a little bit of bigger brand and go after different route to market opportunities in markets where we feel we're established and we have a good brand equity. And that's what we're doing now, and that we're changing some of our route to markets, as we did in the US back in 2017 when they first came in. We're going into more markets like in Germany, Benelux, Sweden, Poland, a range of other ones, I don't remember. But there are markets where we feel there's a great opportunity for us to work with them. So we're adding something to them, but also they're adding something to us, and we're building on great partnerships. And we've had some great partners in these places, like 10-year relationships, working with distributors there who believed in us and have been a key part of our journey, which is the hardest part, again, is the relationships and ending relationships as you move on. But we feel, you know, now is the time to go after the opportunity for Teeling in those markets, and for Irish whiskey and for premium spirits in general. So it's exciting.
It's so exciting.
It does change things, the dynamics do change and so forth. But, you know, hopefully it's the right thing for the brand. Hopefully it's, there will always be challenges with change the route to market. Doesn't matter if you're whatever brand you are, it's always a hard thing to do. We think probably the next 12 months will be a bit of a challenge, but hopefully we're set up for success as we come out of that.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. And all the experience that you've brought from you as a family working in distilleries, and incredibly the intelligence that you'll be gaining, and those insights from Bacardi will absolutely set you up for success. So I'm very excited to see where that will take you moving forward.
So am I.
And of course, of course, they have been very open about saying that, you know, you and Stephen are still going to be leading the ship here. It's not a takeover. It's that there's very much still keeping that essence of what you're trying to create and what you were trying to create with Teeling in the first place. So I think on that note, if I was to ask you one last question, it would be, if you were to encapsulate Teeling in one word or phrase, what would it be? I mean, I asked another and it turned out to be a full three-blown sentence paragraph. So, but what would you say? How would you describe Teeling?
Good question, and not prepared for that one. So, well, you know, our goal has always been to be different, and to be different for the right reason. And you know, the vision involves, you know, creating world class whiskies and putting Irish and Dublin whiskey, you know, at the forefront of minds, as you touched on, that premium whiskey trend happens around the world, and you know, doing our part for the evolution of Irish whiskey, so that consumers come in and they can stay within Irish whiskey, and they can only do that if there's interesting differentiated propositions that can't all be multinationals, can't all be Pernod and all the great things that they're doing, which they're trying to do, but they need smaller, interesting guys, because if the likes of Teeling weren't there, you know, the bigger guys have no need to innovate. So I think it's, hopefully we're paving the way for other new entrants to do something different and to drive that choice and the breadth that consumers demand within Irish whiskey. That's a short answer.
I mean, I have done this a few times now and everyone seems to find that one the most difficult answer. We just want one word. You can't really shut us up.
Well, an Irish person for all words, you're definitely going to get at least 500. So.
Well, Jack, on that note, I want to thank you absolutely for joining us, for sharing your story, sharing the insights that or snippet of the insights that you've gained over the last 12 years almost. And just to really thank you for the contribution you're making to the industry. I think it's a really powerful one. I think the goals that you're setting out, you're absolutely achieving. And I absolutely get the feeling that you're not done yet. So
definitely not
watch
done.
The space.
Definitely not done. A lot more to do. Look, thanks for having on. Hopefully my words of wisdom make sense. And it's an exciting industry. And I'm just proud to be able to represent our family and the category with us.
Thank you.